I'm putting this agenda in front of the committee. Any additions, support of the agenda? Honorable members, I'm presenting the agenda to you. Any adoption? Honorable Mutek.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm here proposing how if we add the issue of Castle's name to be discussed. Because I feel the committee is an international crisis worth it. Thank you.
Honorable members, there is an item added in the agenda. I'm presenting the agenda to you, honorable members. Any adoption of the agenda? Honorable Dev.
Good morning, Chairperson, Minister, and colleagues. I propose to accept the agenda with the addition.
Thank you. Any second? Comment below.
Thank you, Chair. I move to second the proposed agenda to come.
I thank you. Now is the time that I must give the department to take us through. Tend over you, Onga. You want us to pass out the task? I didn't. We start with the agenda as presented, but the CASA issue is put in the agenda as number four, number two. Do you want minister or an or DG that we must start with the CASA? We can do that. Do you want that we must start with the CASA issue to take us through, and then the briefing? Are you ready to do anything that you want to do? I don't know what's going on. Nani Namplans, a computer.
We are ready. Let's
start with the CASA issue, honorable members and the department. Thank you. Into my thing is not working.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members, and the of the committee, the Deputy Minister, and DG, also add on this matter. Honorable members, as a way of background, I think we all know this matter has been time and again coming up and often up to a stage even when, up to the level of Parliament, I recall when it was brought to Parliament and Parliament was supporting the efforts to rally behind Castle Semenya in opposing this discriminatory IWF regulation. But this last year, they came back even sharper, and we're looking at the timing of when they were brought back ahead, where they were to take effect on the 1st of November 2018. the one outlet from our side that we thought would be, you know, there is a blow should those regulations be effected on the 1st of November, which has been the cut that minute, because it targeted certain of those areas of her participation, and even those that she has indicated to participate in politics 2020. So the Department of Sport and Recreation, noting that the matter of concern on what IWAF put before us, considered to make sure that we are able to act and do something so that much as it would have affected CASTA at the moment, but looking at it from far beyond to say it would affect even other athletes, be it from South Africa or Africa, or any of those who would have this particular advantage in life or that is naturally an endowment, but would affect them both as an issue that would affect them health-wise, but also on a human rights angle. I will allow DG to get into the details of what it entails, and therefore we took a decision to make sure that because we feel it directly affected, let us not make it CASTA's matter. Let us make it a country's matter, because taking from experience from the time that IWAF has been, you know, threatening to have this regulation for each of the countries where there would have been an athlete who would be directly affected, the country rallied behind and supported that athlete up to a stage where IWAF had been withdrawing when they felt pressure from those countries. And we're saying, let us use that very same strategy to make sure that it is not just CASTA's matter, it becomes the country's matter. And let us pull whatever expertise that you think is relevant, even to the extent of also utilizing the experts who come from those respective countries, so that from the angle from which they were fighting this regulation, we can also take advantage of the fact that South Africa also had even an opportunity of having people like your Professor Cornelia, who were actually sitting in that IWAF, could pull in digital talk to the various key people who form part of the team. So we don't only have South Africans in the team, we also have drawn in into the team experts coming from those countries, but also as it relates to those areas that we thought we need to pitch our argument on. So I will at this point allow UDG to get and tap into the details and also the campaign that is running, but also to indicate lastly that as part of the campaign and further showing support, we also request upon the President that the Minister of Sport and Recreation be able to find time and also be at the Court of Arbitration in Switzerland, because the court case started yesterday and it will run until Friday. Thank you.
Thank you. Another Minister, did you?
Chair, thank you very much. Honorable members, ministers, deputy ministers, and my colleagues. The case is not new around the customs and the regulations. The regulations
I first voted by IWF back in 2001. And the IWF had back then alleged that in order to bring fairness to sport, or to the sport of athletics, they needed to ensure that everybody competing was on an equal path. And they then suspected, or rather inferred, that athletes with higher levels of testosterone in their bodies had an unfair advantage over the athletes that don't. And back in 2001, they arbitrarily chose the start coach of athletics in which they should have had. And they targeted the middle distances to long distances. And this immediately had an impact to meet an Indian athlete called Dipu Chand. Dipu Chand, knowing that the regulations that they were being put forth were going to impact upon her, and the IWF back then was also mooting that they would go further and actually include shorter distances, which Kasta then was. You recall that at that time there was an uproar, even by the medical fraternity itself, to say that there was no evidence at all. And fast forward to this, we then had in 2011 that the matter came back to the IWF table once more. This time they were a bit more specific. They had relied on some evidence, which later we saw it was tested in the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Back then, South Africa, as well as India, issued a statement condemning the regulation and indicating our support. The way the regulations were finally published, we, South Africa, were preparing our own case to challenge the regulation. And we had assembled a team back then of experts to review that evidence. And secondly, the Indians, in short, beat us to it. The Indian government committed a lot of resources to assemble an international team of lawyers and experts to fight the case. And it was believed that they would share with us, and we will peer review what they have done. And if we were satisfied, it wouldn't be necessary for us to enter the fray. Also back then, there was a challenge that Athletics South Africa itself was, its leadership was in the doldrums, and we were having difficulties with it, and the DM would remember that they were placed under administration for some time, and they were investigated, and so on. They were in no shape to actually mount a formidable challenge to the IWF, and so we actually relied on the Indians to do the job, and the Indians did the job, and they did it very well. And the regulations were thrown out of the CAF. The CAF said that the evidence which either they had relied upon was grossly insufficient to arrive at the conclusions that they were arriving at, and gave them 2 years to go get the evidence and to retrieve that evidence within 2 years, or to withdraw the regulations completely. IWF noting that the 2 year time frame was a bit challenging for them, they duly withdrew the 2011 regulations, which bought them a lot of time. They then engaged with a number of experts and professors from largely European universities. And they came up with a study, which is the basis on which the IWF is relying upon now. And come 2018, IWF in March in the General Council it intended to revise this. You also recall that the matter was then referred to the IWF's own medical commission, which was chaired by a South African professor, Steve Cornelius. And when these regulations were put back onto the table, they met opposition within that commission. There was another commissioner on that commission as well, a South African, a certain Dr. Harold Adams, who is also a deputy president of Athletic South Africa. But during the time the regulations had to now be debated, Dr. Adams was not present. He had taken quite leave and he had been ill for a long time, which left it to Steve Cornelius to contest. In that commission of 13 members, South African voices were quite down. And consequently, that commission passed its resolution last year in August to say that they would refer the regulations to the council. However, members may be aware that during the period the commission was already divided, already there was biasness, because certain key members, including the president of the IWF, had already preempted the outcome of the process. They had already commented on the importance of the regulation, even though it was still being investigated from an evidence point of view. There was already biasness that they would want the regulations to pass and to go through. Which then told us that it wasn't really about science, it was about scientism. And to that extent, the regulations then came forth, and they put them to test. They said that they would want, after the approval of the General Council, for the regulations to kick in on 1st November 2020, which would have meant that if they do, consequent to that, CASA would not have been able to complete the dialogue. So, now, upon learning of the regulations, we went through them as soon as they were published by the IWF. We read them through, and we saw that the regulations were quite unfair and discriminatory. For starters, the report or the study which the IWF had relied upon, that study said women who have higher levels of testosterone or have a difference of sexual development, the so-called GSD athletes, would gain unfair advantage in the following circles. They said the 400 meter to a mile, 400 meter hurdles, there is 800 meters, 1,500 meters, pole vault, and also hammer throw. They said these are the only ones where you are likely to gain some sort of advantage, because supposedly as a woman you've got the power of a man. So, and it is argued that men are stronger biologically and naturally, and therefore in those specific subcodes with the power of a man you have an advantage over a woman. So we're not being told whether in subcodes such as javelins or discus, which involves so on, whether indeed there is no such advantage. But the study is quite silent on other subcodes of athletics. And it also isn't saying anything to us about long distance. 8,000 meters, for instance, where can the endurance of a man over a long distance be the same as that of a woman? It's what science must question, and whether to determine the fairness or unfairness there of the regulation. But of interest was that that is what the study said, and which supposedly the IWF is relying upon. Now what is of concern to us was that However, when the IWF decided to publish the regulation, they then chose carefully. They didn't take all subcodes which the French say you will have an unfair advantage over your competitor. They then left Amathrow and Paul Bolt out and only focused on the distance of that customer area. And which then beckoned for us that if indeed you have an unfair advantage in pole vault, why is then that women with differences of sexual development in pole vault are not being prohibited or being subjected rather to what the regulation suggests, that people must be made to go through medical procedures that they don't really need in order for them to lower a natural level of testosterone within their body in this regard. So, to that extent, we also looked at the gender discrimination of this regulation in that it's only targeting women, but it says nothing about men. Would the inverse apply? If a man who has lower levels of testosterone below what men on average should have, and who have higher levels of estrogen, and I'm sure such men you have seen, they develop breast, they do all sorts of things, but their organs are weak, but they have quite high levels of testosterone. Would you then argue, if the logic of the IWF is to be followed, would you then argue that therefore such men are at a disadvantage in running against men with higher levels of testosterone, and therefore by inverse, they should be made to run with men? Why are regulations only one side that is normally looking also at men who will be at such an unfair disadvantage if the regulations are to be applied equitably and fairly across gender? And thirdly, we also realized in our analysis that the distances chosen are the distances that typically are dominated by African women. Whereas we suspect that the reason why pole vaults as well as Amathrow are left out is purely because European athletes are the ones who are dominant in those subcodes of athletics. And there are no African trains. And we have never really, Africa has never really won a medal in women's pole vault. The closest Africa has ever had to an Olympic medal has been with a certain Auguste Gray, a man from Rosie School, here in South Africa. But he was a man. Woman, no African has ever really made it to the Diamond League, nor to the Welsh Cup or to the Olympics or Commonwealth. So all the time, it has been European athletes that have dominated that space. So our suspicion was exactly that, therefore, this terms of subtle racism in how the IWF was pursuing this. But secondly, we wanted to test the science behind this science that we have applied upon. So the minister directed that the high-level panel be appointed, whose terms of reference would be to look at presenting quite a political case. And what the IWF has done this time around, knowing that they have lost the Chan case, they decided to limit their scope of the ban only to short distances at Kampala. So they are really only Kampala. And now this time around, Ruchi Chan is quite simple. The distances in which she runs are not affected by the regulation. And in that way, IWF has decided that instead of facing two governments at one fight as a group, they rather divide. And once they are successful with us, then we suspect that they will change gear and change their focus and expand on the subgroups that needs to be done, and they'll focus on their so with that in mind, the high-level panel was intended to look at that. It divided his work along three work streams. The first work stream was the medical work stream. This work stream was chaired by Dr. Patrol Zuni. When we began, we agreed on high levels of confidentiality around the information to be gathered in the data. And we also, because we also wanted ourselves at South Africa, and this we have to brief the committee in the speakers for confidence, we had to receive Caster's own medical information to be able to make a determination in this regard, where we stand vis-à-vis the times that the paper was presenting. And I think hence why it was so important to keep the confidentiality among the members. Good thing is that there has never been a single leak from the work of the IAM Federal Panel, and everybody has really respected the processes which we have used to. And in that process, we work only with South African experts in phase one of the work. And secondly, we also wanted to then do a literature review, a study to look at all work related to this aspect already published by all universities worldwide. So it became quite a lot of work within a very short space of time. So we had to hire, we ended hiring about 32 PhD candidates at various six universities of our country. They were all going through research and all the research that was there, making summaries for the experts to look at. The government has been paying for all that work. And we also realized that there were gaps in some studies. We had to do some quick research on that. And so typically, a student in PhD, doing a PhD study, has to complete their studies between 3 to 5 years. We didn't have the time. And so we wanted the work done and for us to get results immediately. So we had to get like 7, 8 students working on the same topic at the same time. So someone is doing chapter one, another one is already writing chapter two. So we were able to complete the gaps in time and finish all of that. Once we finished, after the literature review, we then saw the eminent work that were quite important. For instance, a certain professor, English professor at Columbia University, Professor Ndjelma, he had written a kind of seminal work criticizing the paper the IWS is writing about. And we had also approached him, asking if he can join the work and the team. He had lately agreed, he has shared with us even his working papers, the calculations and everything. And he's one of our key star witnesses in this matter. We have also went to universities in Europe as well to get those who do not agree with their own peers from European universities in the IWS. And we have also collected their own work and papers, and they have agreed to become experts to the case. The second work stream was around legal matters pertaining to the land. First, we wanted to see the authority and the power of the Council of the IWS to pass resolutions or regulations of this magnitude. Our contention is that the regulations should have been put first before the Congress of the IWS, and clearly it doesn't appear that this has been the case. Secondly, we had argued issues of ethics, the realities around it. If any doctor is to touch you and examine you and make a diagnosis on you, they require your consent. And that consent is not passive consent, but it must be informed consent. And that's why a patient in a coma, the informed consent moves away from that patient and moves to the next doctor, who must be informed of the nitty-gritties, including the pros and cons of any procedure that this to be taken. And once they understand, they can either say yes or reject or whatever. In this case, we are wondering how is the IWF going to go about doing this. Members may recall that our team, Bayana Bayana, when a certain Nogu Mago was simply for that team, each time we went to play with countries like Nigeria, so they were made in the dressing rooms to take off their cleaning trousers and for them to inspect whether it is worth doing. such barbaric acts are not on our website, but they have had. And what we see with the IWF is that they are supervising to do it. They are finding a new method of doing the same things of old in a different way. And we are arguing that they must disclose to us their methodology of going to protect that someone has higher levels of testosterone. Is it by simply looking at the person because they don't look like you, you suspect that they are PhD or not? Or exactly how are you going to do it? And if you are to approach them and say, can we take your blood to check the testosterone level in your blood, this athlete has got to agree. And then what happens if they do not agree because they've got the right to bodily integrity, they've got the right to privacy, and to all of that. And so the ethics part of this thing is what we are also raising. Because they certainly can't use the WADA process. Right now, WADA process works on the basis of passive consent. So basically, the understanding with WADA and with the WADA code, which we, South Africa, believe is that if an athlete is going to play sports, they are indirectly consenting that they will be tested for banned substance. And that's why we make a clear distinction between doping and this matter. Yes, of course, induced testosterone, honorable member, is a banned substance. If I take testosterone from a male body somewhere and I inject it into my bloodstream, then that's that. But naturally occurring testosterone is in your own body, which is produced by your own body and not induced from anywhere else. That naturally occurring testosterone is not a banned substance in terms of the water, and it's not listed in the list of prohibited substances. And therefore you can't use the water process of taking someone's urine under false pretenses that you are going to test prohibited substances, and then you test for alcohol. Last time I used an example of HIV and AIDS. If a doctor takes your blood and says they are going to test for whether you are positive for the bacteria in your bloodstream or not, and then while they are edging, they decide, let me just test you also for HIV, you are going to sue that doctor, and the chances that they lose their practice license is quite high, and that they face consequences from the medical cancer, the professional cancer will be quite high, primarily because all these other clinical issues may be tested, but HIV has to be tested in some context, and which is the same point that I raised before about informed consent, that WADA process can be used for one intervention process and that is applied to the other, and in this case, testing levels of testosterone in one's body. Having said all of that, we then also went further to look at the merits of IWF case. And I will not go into detail about the two arguments you are putting forth there. But however, the truth is that there is quite a lot of issues with the court. With the studies we have done on the medical funds, we have managed to prove that where you grew up, the climate, the altitude you grew up at, all of that affects how much testosterone you produce or how much estrogen you produce. What you eat, your diet, affect all of those factors, and depending on what you eat daily, changes and fluctuates those levels. And we have also proven that when you train in high altitude, in fact the impact on your performance is by far even higher than testosterone itself. So what is CASPA? Who trains at higher altitude? All I have said is purely because of training at higher altitude, because that factor alone is so significant in order that. And if we were to pursue the argument of fairness of the IWF, then we must say that athletes that train at lower altitude must not be allowed to train with athletes at higher altitude, because the ones that I have had an unfair advantage over them, but that advantage is so significant to exceed the advantage testosterone will give. So if that is the case, why then target only testosterone and leave all of these other factors that we have used to about that? And I think that that is one of our most cogent arguments. Then, secondly, we are also arguing what the minister pointed out, the issue of being naturally endowed. You were born like that. Should we be changing you? Is it ethically correct to change you into something you are not in order for us to say we are achieving fairness? Put differently, a tall athlete who throws a dart in the sport of dart, will he have any advantage touching the rope? But in the sport of basketball, where the basket is at 2.3 meters high and you have to throw, and on average, most people are 1.8 meters, and the tallest people are 1.92, 1.96, you know. It's quite rare you record people who are 2 meters, 2.3 meters high. But they have been recorded in history, those people. They have had some natural defects when they were born and so on, and they grew taller. There have been some gene mutation within their chromosomes, and they have grown much taller than what an average person has. Are you now going to say that that person doesn't play basketball primarily because he is more tall and he's reach of the basket, he doesn't have to jump, he just has to take the ball and the thank you in? So you are going to suggest, if you are suggesting as they are suggesting in Qatar, that therefore they must undergo an operation to cut their legs and reduce them, so that they don't have to reach and have an unfair advantage over others. So a person like Michael Phelps, who has a different natural defect with him, some chromosome, his feet grow abnormally and his hands grow abnormally. But everybody knows that with big feet and big hands, and that's why frogs have webbed feet and webbed forehead. You have an unfair advantage in a sport like swimming. And that's why Phelps breaks all the records that are known. So in order to take the logic of IWF and its ridiculousness further, are you going to suggest that first hands must then be trimmed and cut off and his feet to be reduced so that then he is on par and doesn't have advantage over his competitor? It is simply ridiculous. How far will you draw the line? And why then would you suggest medical interventions to a person who has no complaints but still health and force them into taking medication that really they do not need for any other purpose other than you designing them into being what they were not going to do? And so with it, we have given quite a number of examples, and we have also showed that other international sports federations also have DFD players. And from time immemorial, I'm sure you remember a certain Martina Navratilova, and even today in tennis you still have Samantha Postosuk and many others. But the Women's Tennis Association and the ITF have never at any point, other than when they attempted with the Williams sisters, and America will have none of it, and even threatened to cancel, even the threatened to even ban the American US Open. And they quickly retreated, and no one has ever again raised the issue about the Williams sisters. But is it because America is a world power that they would do that? But in any case, there are no other federations in international, also affiliated to the IOC, that are pursuing regulations of this nature. And if what the IWF tries to do is allowed to succeed, then we'll see a plethora of all of this rules coming on board. The third work stream was on the government website, and here our job was really to work out the modernization of society, to run a media campaign to educate society about this matter, and to also go further in this regard to lobby through diplomatic channels international sports organization, international human rights group, to lobby as well through our diplomats globally, other countries to support us, including other athletics federations. Members will be aware that already the Canadian Athletics Federation has issued the the Canadian has issued a statement in support. I'm sure you have seen the number of international athletes as well as our local federations supporting this step we have taken. We have launched a campaign called Naturally Superior to reflect that CASA has been born that way. She's natural and her superiority stems out of her own nature. She's not in any way and she has not taken any performance in the past. And to that extent as well, the case has started in NS yesterday. And the rules of the CAF require that all parties and the students to education shouldn't really be allowed to disclose the weight of the case and the key arguments. But the IAA has had an underhanded engagement and they released their own arguments as well as use of the experts and so on. So in day one, there were already fireworks in that court. We were fighting to have fairness of the process. And the court agreed with us that indeed there was a breach of confidentiality. And the court agreed that we too will have a right to issue a statement so that the world can also know where we stand and what we are arguing. So to that extent, I think the statement is being prepared. It will be sent back home today. We will look at it before it's issued. But we are in a hurry to get it issued out today so that we don't lose the momentum as the case progresses and that we too can skew media because you may have seen what European television have done last night. After that, we have released the list of experts. Those experts were being interviewed by European television and they were influencing European public opinion about how the case must go. So we intend to do the same thing. We have already lined up Dr. Pato Zondi, who was the chair of our medical group. She will also do telephonic interviews with local radio stations here at home. And we will also get the international experts to do the interviews globally. So on day one, we won round one. So we still have a long way to fight. It's going to be a bitter fight by week. And there will be deliberations. The judgment is expected at the end of March this year. And we will then know what happens. If we lose the case, and God should forbid we should lose, but should we lose the case, we still have another avenue to fight this. We have begun with that work of lobbying members of the IAAF to then to appeal this regulation that they are under, that they are Congress. So we are lobbying all of them individually and collectively to oppose the regulations. And the minister has already addressed the African Union Sports Council in fact, which passed a resolution to support us in this regard. We are pushing for a similar resolution on the continental body. And we are asking the DM as well as chair of our committee on teachers from the UNESCO to lobby all the countries involved. Unfortunately, majority of them are European, but we want to pursue them nevertheless and pursue everybody, including South America and Asia, to pursue them to give us their votes, so that come the next day of the conference, should we have lost the case, then we should be able to get the members to reject the regulation. So that's the summary.
It's not a summary, it's a...
If I show you the volume somewhere, you realize...
I didn't want to reject that, because, you know, when UDG is giving something, doesn't make mistake not to give a detail. But as this committee, this information is very important. I was seeing that... as a chair, there's so many people I've seen that they are panicking. I was just relaxed because these things belong to this room in order that, you know, the the people of media, they've been calling some of us. I don't respond and answer when I don't have information. I didn't do anything because I wanted this platform to have information. And when we know that we started with the department as a committee, but the process that I was seeing unfolding, it was very important that you must get an informed answer when you are responding. So I was just relaxed when UDG doing what he's popular of, when he's giving any information. He can't be short, and this is not a short version. It's a fully fledged report. Thank you, Minister, DM to UDG. Honorable Bergman. Oh, just a moment, Minister.
Just one thing to say, we have written to the Speaker of the on the matter, just to say we have this matter that we think is of national importance. Maybe we can be supported by the committee. We were informing to whether they would find within the program if we can make the statement in Parliament for it.
Point taken, Minister. Honorable members, this is the report I've seen already, the end of Honorable Bergman, Honorable Muteka, Honorable... Let me start again. Honorable Bergman, Honorable Clara, Honorable Muteka, Honorable Bev, and that of Honorable Mosley. Thank you.
Sure, thanks very much. Of late, one of the biggest headings has been body shaming. I get it because I order 3 Burger King burgers and then I have the Coke last. Body shaming is actually quite a big and serious issue, and I must say that I think this is one of the highest forms of body shaming, and I think it's very unfair on an athlete to have to almost be the pin-up person for this campaign, which, as the DG and the Minister said, this is actually something that didn't necessarily start around Casper, but she's almost become the person that's targeted, and I think that's highly unsporting for athletics, International Athletics Federation, to do such. The DA, through the Shadow Minister, has already put out a press release of support, but we will support the Minister in a public display in whatever action she deems necessary. But we must fight for this discrimination in sports to end as soon as possible and send a strong message. What I cannot understand is that swimming is not number one in all these categories. So it shows that she doesn't have a specific advantage besides being talented. It shows that she is competing and that she has to work very hard for that, which would kind of be proof enough that there is no advantage. Taking into account exactly what the DG is saying in terms of high altitude and low altitude, we've seen other athletes that have fallen from grace where their best place to train were in high altitude areas. And I think it's just something that if we don't have our own organizations and federations in order, we can't represent them internationally enough. The DG again has alluded to it. For time, ASA was under its own management issues. SASCOX also had some issues. And these are the federations that have to defend us on the international sphere. So on our side, we will do whatever to support that we propel the Hands Off Casper campaign. I think it's something that now is the time to raise that and to all rally behind it. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Batman. You can go on.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome first to the explanation given by the teacher. Taking it from there, I think the modus operandi that the DG have highlighted, I think, covers it all in the sense that there was consultation in terms of the aspects and the pieces of legislation were consulted. Now, what puzzles me about the issue of CASA. We usually regard that if you are excelling in a particular sport, that is God-given, it's mostly. Now, how do we then argue a God-given talent to say a CASA is performing like a man? You know that when you are to get your fitness, a lot of things are considered, even your nutrition. Can you then say, if I compete, we usually, when we were at primary school, when we participated in athletics, our counterparts were excelling because of their nutrition. Can you then say, a white particular somebody is being advantaged by nutrition? Even the example that you raised of your physical build, that as a high jumper, me, I'm very tall and I'm competing against a short person. Will you now say I be disadvantaged because I'm short and the other one is tall? That is not the way on how to articulate what they want to achieve. Now, as they're saying, they have a specific focus on 400 meters, 800 and 1005. It goes without saying that they are targeting CASA. Those are the races that in which she's performing very good. Now, I think what I can say is that let's not lose hope. Let's pursue the matter up to the ladder, up until we exhaust all measures that will affect CASA. Thank you, Chair.
Very interesting contribution. Thank you, Honourable Mutek.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by greeting you, Chair, the Minister, the Deputy Minister, DG, and the entire committee. You know, Chairperson, as Africans, we never challenge the God creation. We never challenge what God has created, which is. So, my view is, these Europeans, they are trying to challenge how God has made people like us. So they are throwing away their Christian beliefs because they want to pursue racism and anti-African. So, Chairperson, the reason why I asked us to put this on the agenda is because I think we need a radical day of action against CASA senior clubs. Radical day of action against CASA senior clubs. Because CASA feature, or the way she is, He didn't induce those tetrachthon things. She was given by God. She was built like that by God. Who are they to challenge God? Who are they to challenge God? So this is not just national crisis. It's international. If indeed God is the mother and father of everyone on earth, who are these people? So, Shepherdson, again, if you can look at this, if I captured the DG well, not capturing this version of the... if I captured his point well, is that we are here fighting we are here fighting against racism, and we are also fighting against anti-Africanism. And the last one is that we are fighting against disrespect to the Almighty God. So, in 2001, they tried it through, I made the name, Dare to Chant. They tried it. It was never implemented. And it was, that time it was for long distance. And then in 2011, because these things they do them to target people, not to regulate for the sake of regulating code. In 2011, they brought it back to challenge Qatar's minerals performance. Now it's no longer long distance, it's short distance. So that time they were targeting China, and after they lost it, they are now targeting Qatar. Because if it was a genuine thing, they were supposed to put it across all codes and all distances. So why it was long distance, now they've thrown away the long distance thing, it is now short distance, just to target this one. Why the codes that are played by them in majority are not affected? It's racism. It's racism. Why men? Men, myself and Deputy Minister, we don't have the same level of testosterone. Maybe. And then why us are not regulated? Why not? That is sexism. So, Chairperson, I'm saying, let us put away, I know it's election time, but let us put away political affiliations. This is a matter of national importance. Let us work as one nation and then fight this thing. Because it's not only Qatar. This thing is going to affect many people. They are going to deal with us one by one. If we think Qatar is, by the way, just somebody else. But I think we need a day of practical action, Chairperson. And this week, during this conference, then us as portfolio committee members and the leadership of the department will lead a march to court. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, thank you, Honorable Mudek. I'm looking at our time and the agenda of today. I don't know what I'm going to say about it. Today we're having plenary and now it's past 12 and we're supposed to be out at 1 o'clock. I'm not saying anything because I'm suspecting that agenda number one, it cannot take us 30 minutes, as I'm saying. I'm saying that we deserve to discuss this issue of Ukasa, and I'm just cautioning that maybe we can have a briefing that we cannot have chance to engage with it. So I'll hear from you as time goes on. I'm not want to cut anyone. I want that honourable members must say something, especially that even the team and the minister will be going there. And I don't know the proposal of honourable Song. I was thinking along those lines that on these days we need to have do something shown by members, or especially members of parliament, but the priority members of the committee. Maybe it's one other thing that we must discuss, maybe seeing that the action must be happening, especially with us that we've started to support.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll be brief. I just want to say hands off our cats and hands off. Yes, I'm just going to comment, like you said, Kester was born naturally like that as a woman. And I think as women we support Kester as a woman, and that is how it should be. I also want to comment and say well done on the high level panel. And the confidentiality, we know South Africa has been a problem recently. Mm. So please convey to them that we are very proud of them for keeping their confidentiality.
Yeah.
That is what we need. Didi, you also mentioned Martina Navratilova. And you know, we followed her when we were kids. And we were quite intrigued. We didn't understand certain things. But it's interesting if what the text would have been today, if we had to investigate that. Also, I'd like to know, just for interesting sake, the IAS. What are they saying about the exchange, you know, in line with all this? Is there anything they say, because the people's constitution, the right and the human rights allow you to do whatever you want to do with your body, yeah. And then, Melissa, we fully support you on any action that you take, whatever it is, if you're going to protest, if you're going to do a statement, if you're going to march, whatever you do, we support you, we'll do whatever you need to do to support you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Musa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll try to sort any questions that I've asked. But let me also join those who are, you know, thanking the department as well as the minister for having, you know, taken a position to support the culture and indicate our position as a country. But also, Chairperson, to indicate that the likes of Martina Navratilova should actually be persuaded, because I heard over the weekend that she's actually in support of culture, and should look at and persuade them to even, you know, make their voices be heard and become louder. I'm glad as well, Chairperson, that because at a certain point I had a fear that, you know, this thing, you know, would come up with an evidence that it has been, you know, scientifically proved. But I'm glad that the DG indicated it, that there is no pathological evidence. It then says that whatever they are doing, it's mere speculation and cannot, you know, act on that. Chairperson, my other question is to request is to try to ask the department to bring in India in, because I understand, according to the BG, when we were together with them, it became easy for us, you know, to win those people. I'm thinking that now that they have put them aside, they might have probably seen the strength of India. And I want to believe that should they win this case against us, they are going to escalate it to India today. So it's better to bring them now so that we get strengthened up. The last part, Chairperson, that I want to make is to check with the department whether we have a policy that would protect our athletes against this thing. Do we have such a policy, or do we have only things that would say we don't discriminate against gender, religion, blah 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 blah? And I think the IAF is very blunt on this one. So we need, perhaps, if we don't have such a policy, we need to have it, so that when we argue our point and our cases in the future,
we would be saying to them that, here is our policy, here is our constitution, this is what we believe in. I'm saying, how do we argue this minister of DG when they can say, they don't even have anything. What is it that they're arguing about? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Members, the only thing that I can say, the Deputy Minister just are reminding us, as Chairperson and every member, that we need to do, to sign the, we are still short of about 50 signatories on this. So it's very important that we must do. But I must say, in passing, not in joking, I'm really, this thing is very disturbing. You know, I'm from a clan of Amadlomo. There's no one, it's very rare that you must get a shot, but there are those. But by nature, we are all tall. So who can now want to change that we are a clan of tall people? So this thing is very irritating. Some of us is very emotional. Sometimes I don't want even to answer with the people who always want to interview you, because the very onset when it started, I was very furious looking at the discriminatory things that happened. But until this time that we're still having these people who are very not sensitive to each gender. So we are supporting our minister. Will be issuing a statement immediately after this. I'm suspecting these officials of ours. Today we have the researcher, content advisor. We need a very strong statement whilst now we even have a full information of our department. Honorable Minister.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. And I think Honourable Jeta, it has been great that you said the committee should have this information and this discussion that we had, which enhances on some of what we have put forward. It will arm us, and we appreciate the support of the committee on the maybe moving forward, we will appreciate if the committee can also support us in making sure we can also have a similar debate in Parliament.
Mm.
Because much as it happened earlier in 2011, the intensity of what is happening now and the fact that we are actually before the Court of Arbitration as you speak, it would send such a very, also a big voice out there in the world to say, even, you know, the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, I think it can go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And also, on the issue of persuasion of other voices, I think as part of the very campaign, we also put together what we call ambassadors, derived from various influential segments of society, some South Africans who would not be based here, but some outlets internationally who, as part of the media and the space that we are trying to also occupy in order to make this voice, we think would be influential people when they speak, they are listened to as the head audience of the whole world. So we also are picking up on that kind of a platform. Why one of members could have also picked throughout in terms of the campaign after the launch, the positive responses from our federation. They've been coming in supporting individual athletes. They have been coming in as I make videos to actually communicate. So it has been so, you know, powerful, going well, and I think it can go even much more when moving forward, DJ. I think these matches and all of that now mobilizing physically, even the communities throughout, we'll think about that and share with the honorable members. We think can be done. At least, we'll also use the platform over there to also deal with some of the big media houses as part of the interview on the ledger. Did you DM on some of the aspects that have been raised? But lastly, that we do have some campaign t-shirts with honorable members, but maybe take a photo as well, just like we did for netball. And actually, I must say, the netball appreciated so much that one when you were supporting them, the photograph where you put your hands up for netball 2023. They immediately posted it. It was, in a way, also influencing on the decision that we are awaiting. Yeah. So it was very important for them. So I wish also to convey their appreciation on that.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. The Minister asked to be excused at 12:45 when you still can leading us. I've agreed. Honorable Minister, the Priorities Committee, I'm not releasing you. I'm saying officially, you know why you asked to be released. I'm not. This is
quickly the two issues. We have a policy to protect athletes. Yes, our white paper on sports recreation in South Africa details quite clearly the protection of athletes. We have also the sports plan as a code of conduct for athletes and all of that who have done that. But it also says we must speak about that part is what is still outstanding and undone. But as far as women in sport, the policy is at draft stage. And the CEO here is chairing the panel that's finalizing that policy. We have just had actually engagement with the Department of Women on the same matter. So it will soon come to the minister and the roadshows will then follow directly to the organizers on that one. IWA has position on sex change athletes. In truth, their regulations now are quite silent about that matter. But we know that they are quite opposed to the idea that a person who, say, for instance, was previously a male and then has changed gender to become female, they don't want that person to compete against female. What the jury is still out, whether they agree to a previous female who changes sex to become a male. Are they comfortable with that person then running with males and so on? But we know in other codes like cycling, women who were previously male are allowed to compete with females. So the situation is not the same across all federations. Thank you.
Thank you, PG. Honorable Deputy Minister, at 12:30, wanted to be excused. Anything that you want to contribute on? Okay. Honorable members, let me give our office to brief us. Try to be brief to the point. I'm suspecting we are going to engage, but you must remember of what when I was opening saying that I've seen the Office of Minister yesterday given something which was very important to me, seeing that this department for five times having a clean audit, it doesn't mean that you must not scrutinize your report. Now is the time that you must do that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Indeed, I think this is also your contribution that yesterday the Office of the Auditor General formally presented us with our King Audit Award for the fifth consecutive year. And that in itself, Honorable Chair, was an indication of your robust work that you've been doing to make sure that you are able to account for monies that we are responsible for, and that we put every effort to make sure, even in terms of our systems in the department, we try by all means to be in line. But also the fact that it is a clean audit, Honorable Chair, and our interactions are really, this is what we want to keep. And therefore, as we present today our third quarter report, we think, Honorable Chair, it is in many ways where we see the information, although it has been overtaken by events, because already now we are in another mm-hmm. quarter, and our team will be able to give updates, because we do not really have another point where you are updated in terms of the progress into 2018-2019 financial year. So I will ask them to also indicate our performance budget. We believe that the report, as we'll be giving you, will give some significant progress. We have been trying to explain, Chair, that our first and second quarters are often reflecting a slower progress. Much of the work is piled up more on the third quarter. So that is where now you will also try to get an appreciation of that, and we'll also be sharing some reasons for some of the deviations for the targets that are lagging behind. And another issue is the fact that we continue, Chairperson, to work on our transformation plan. We also are continuing to defend the case of solidarity, and also pursuing on the implementation of SASCOP. We are meeting with SASCOP tomorrow morning here, following the processes as they have been unfolding. We have a meeting with them tomorrow. And lastly, just to also shorten on my introduction so that you can get the details, Chair. The World Anti-Doping Agency, as you may know, that we were one of the founding members of that agency, and we served on the Inaugural Foundation Board. That Uma Kengese Stokely was one person who was instrumental in WADA. So now, in 2019, is a new term, and it is where African reps had to be represented there. One of the seats is then for South Africa, so the Minister of Sport will take one of the cities, and the other country is Egypt, representing the continent. Thank you. DG will then make the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Thank you, Honorable Minister. DG, I'm seeing you delegating
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Chair, Minister, Deputy Minister, DGs, members and colleagues. Madam Chair, I think everyone has a copy of the presentation. I'm going to go through it very quickly and of course just to highlight areas of the non-achievement, reasons for non-achievement, and actually looking also projecting for the year and how our targets will be achieved as well. Madam Chair, if you're looking at it, this is the third quarter report on performance. Yes, all will deal with the finances. We have also submitted this report to our audit committee through the National Treasury, through the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, and we're bringing it here before the September committee. If we're looking at the overall achievement of the department in quarter three, we have achieved 64.3%. It is based on, we have 28 targets that we have to achieve, and of the 28, we've achieved 18 targets. And this is across all the programs. Madam Chair, if we're looking at it, there's a slide on slide three that gives you the overall picture per program, where there has been achievement and where there's been underachievement as well. If we continue onto slide four, and in quarter three, I'm focusing here, Madam Chair, on the targets that were not achieved. In program one, the targets were not achieved in terms of performance statements that had to be moderated. I will go into the reasons later. The number of client satisfaction survey reports that were presented at the management, and the percentage of invoices paid within 30 days. In program two, there's the number of people actively participating in sports promotion campaigns and events per year. The number of people actively participating in organized sports and recreation events. The number of learners participating in school sports tournaments at a district level. Madam Chair, as much as the third quarter target has not been achieved, the annual target has been achieved in this indicator. And then the last one is the number of schools, hubs, and clubs provided with equipment and attire for the established norms and standards. Madam Chair, then in quarter in program 3.1, the number of SASCOP MOU progress reports evaluated, the number of athletes supported through scientific support programs, the number of sporting recreation bodies receiving financial and non-financial support, the number of multi-purpose sports courses, and then the number of community gyms and children's play concerts. So these were the targets that were not achieved in quarter 3, Madam Chair. Again, Madam Chair, if we look at our performance towards the annual target as of quarter three, we estimated that at the end of the financial year, we would have achieved 88% of our target. If you look here, there is a likelihood that some of our targets will not be achieved by the year end, but most of them will. And then, Madam Chair, if we go to slide number 7, our annual target that we are likely not to achieve, we may not achieve and we are likely not to achieve. We've got 34 indicators in total, Madam Chair, and there are only 4 indicators where we may not achieve our target on. And that is the percentage of invoices paid within 30 days. And in this case, Madam Chair, if you're looking at the span of invoices, there's only one invoice that has not been paid within such a day out of more than 800 invoices. But obviously, if you don't pay one, it's an underachievement across the board. So just to indicate that as much as that is an underachievement, it's only one invoice that has not been paid within such a day. So that has spoiled the record for us across the board. Number of people actively participating in organized sport and active recreation events, number of multicultural sports courses, and the number of teams. So these are only four targets that we are likely not to achieve by the end of the financial year. I'm going to go to slide number 10, the start of program one, just to show where the underachievement is and the reason. If you look at 1.1, the performance assessment is moderated. Here, there are only four assessments. There are only four four assessments that still have to be done. It will be done by the end of the financial year. At the moment, there were extra 3, so it has not been achieved. By the end of February, that target will be achieved. If you go to slide number 11, the client satisfaction survey, that is work in progress. It has been presented to the MANCO. It will now be finalized before the end of the financial year. I've spoken about the invoicing. Program 2, if you're looking at slide number 14, the number of people actively participating in sports promotion campaigns and events per year. We have a target of 5,136. We're hoping that with the verification of information by the end of the fourth quarter, we're hoping that that should be achieved. If you're looking at slide number 16, the number of people actively participating in organized sports and national recreation events has been checked. I think this is something that we have had a challenge with over the years. The target that was set for us has not been something that we've done ourselves. We have progressively decreased the number of the target for this indicator. We're hoping that by the end of the financial year, we will get close to 600, but it is unlikely that we will get to the 600 in the program. Number of learners participating in school sport tournaments. Here, the target in previous quarters were already exceeded, so as much as we have not achieved the target in this quarter, the annual target has been exceeded. Slide number 17, the number of schools and clubs provided the equipment and attire. It should have been 2,500. The third quarter target was 1,000. We've only had 666. Our biggest provinces have yet to procure the equipment and attire, and which they're going to do in the fourth quarter. We have had a new transversal tender that was issued. So there were some teething issues and challenges with the new service provider. And hence, by the end of the fourth quarter, all provinces will have secured both the equipment and attire. If we go to program 3, slide number 21, the number of athletes supported through scientific support programs. Our target, annual target, has been achieved, while support for 3 targets may not be achieved, the annual target has already been achieved. Program 4, slide number 25, number of sports and recreation bodies receiving financial and non-financial support in the critical system to meet their transformation targets. The quarter target was 49. There were 40 that received their financial support. I would say here it's very, very important that we have serviceable agreements that we signed with sports federation. The PFMA does not allow us to transfer funding to federations who have not complied with the SLA and with the precepts of the CFMA. If the supporting documents, if we do not have documents or reports of previous year's support, if there's no audited financial statement for previous years, we are not allowed and cannot transfer funds to those federations. But hopefully, Madam Chair, by the end of the financial year, we will have a better picture in which federations will not get their transfer. But as we are presently in the first quarter, there were only 9 federations that did not get their transfer. 4.4, Madam Chair, the number of multi-purpose sports tables. We have a target of 12 for the financial year. We have 7 that posted. 7 of them were delivered in the third quarter. We still have some delays in getting the site finalized, because obviously when we look at schools that we identify, we need to go through the space, we need to do all the technical inspections of the sites to make sure that they're properly graded and leveled, etc. So that when we put those sports courts, so that it's not a wasted expenditure, because we have had incidents where sports courts are actually constructed and only to find that soil is not suitable. And we have, before you know it, those things are damaged, and the weather conditions are also affected because it's not properly done. Madam Chair, I'm going to program 5 on slide 29, the number of senior citizens and children play park construction. Here, Madam Chair, there's dependency on the municipality because we construct the outdoor gyms in municipalities. Municipalities have to make the sites available. They have to make sure that it's within the IGP, etc. So a lot of times we have found that this is not the lengthy consultation process has delayed our delivery on this list. We may deliver some of it, but not all of it will be delivered by the end of the financial year. Madam Chair, that's the performance report. There is a narrative that has accompanied the report as well, so we would see which generation the paper that we will deposit with the financial report as well. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The financials are as follows, Chair. Record 31, December 2018. We have spent 81.5% of the budget. Our budget in the overall being 1.1 billion. And as the minister indicated, the third quarter is our most previous quarter. And so, as you may have seen, for the first few quarters, it appears in the understanding. We have since jumped the nominations to 25% by end of the third quarter due to the completion of many of our programs in the third quarter. And we are now, we were at 81.5%. We are confident we will be able to spend all the money by the end of the financial year. Our biggest worry has been around the compensation, and we will come to us shortly. Our spending on compensation has been 2.5%, and so we are expecting that we will spend the money. We have just finalized the processes around government benefits of the individual, and we are also feeling the benefits that we are spending there. On goods and services, Madam Chair, we have spent 156.3 million of the total available of the 70 million to this panel, which represents 91.9%, and as you know, in the first quarter we have quite a limited number of activities we do, and now we are visiting the Office of the Minister, and the department is focused on the administration and the winding down of this. We are left effectively with 1 more month, we will be able to spend the cheese on all the money we have. Chair, if you look at transfers, the spending there is looking at 18.5. As the COO has just indicated, we believe that we would be able to spend all the money. This is an area where we spend 100% of the budget per year, and we do not have a budget that we would be able to spend all of it. You may know that last year, Federal Aid gave us an important concession that those federations were done doing well. We now have a right to reallocate the money to the other federations. And this has, since last year, helped us be able to spend all the money we have. And as far as the KTAC is concerned, you see that our KTAC is quite small. It's only 2.4 million. This is our total capital expenditure budget. We have to buy furniture, computers, every other thing that we require. To come from that we got 2.4 million. Each year, Chair will know that we spend almost all that money. So even now, we're capitalizing our IT equipment, and we believe that by the end of the financial year, we will spend all the money. And also that we're willing to put a moratorium now for that 2 years on the purchase of new furniture. So we, some chairs have become HAT and some financial ratings require application. So we are prioritizing everything we have on what we need to do. Chair, we have not spent much on households because we have, as far as we are now on our budget, we have only 1 household. We haven't paid the cut data as yet, its share. The payment is normally made on February. We will be making it now after we receive the invoices. We will process that quite well. in as far as departmental agencies and accounts, Chair, we are also on the same power with that. And we are confident that we will spend all the money in that market as well. If we look at the economic classification program to nation, those are the divisions in how far we have gone. You will see that in essence we have spent in that program 80.7% of the total budget. Of course, between now and March, what we normally do is that community sport is the one that is sending. We still have one more championship. The championship starting now in March, the athletics only, as part of our four-legged championship. Okay? So that too will come and go. And we would have finished all the money in that space. Typically, we normally overspend this area by about 2% every year, on average 1.7, 1.9, and so on. But then we balance it out with the rest of the budget in other areas. On winning nation, Chair, we are at 97.5, and this represents the bulk of the work that has already been done. You would know that by this time, the money that remains for us is for payment of the ministerial bazaaries and then the budget in that entire school district. So we are now where we are comfortable that we will be able to balance out. In program for sports support, Chair, the federations, as the CEO has explained, we have paid 81.8% of the available money. And last week, and actually the whole of January and February, and up until last week, we have been paying more federations in this regard. In as far as infrastructure support is concerned, we are at 47.0%. The COO has explained it today with the finalization around the delivery of the gyms and the multiple sport courts, but we are doing everything to pull the stops to ensure that we end up the delivery and finalization of the site. So we are being confident that that too, we will be in a position to spend the money. The science around this time for us is to do everything as possible to get as close to zero as we can. But we shouldn't ever overspend the votes, because that's the biggest thing, because then I'm going to appear before this committee about unauthorized expenditure, and I'm going to end up as scopper and so on. So it's best some money remain, but the secret is to try to have as little remain as possible, because the biggest thing in the theater is trying to overspend. So that's why all the time we're at 99.9%, because budgeting is not a correct plan. There is a year, this man here tried, he said, DG, we must lift 2 rounds this year. And that thing backfired in a big way in our things, because on the 31st of March, last day of the financial year, we were monitoring our accounts every hour and getting a report how much we have, and we kept on saying, yeah, pay that invoice, pay that one, and now pay that one. We did that up until 12 o'clock, and after we had conferred with the treasurer that they had processed everything, they said, yes. Only for the following 2 days, they ran the supplementary payments, and we found ourselves with an overdraft by how much? Yeah, about 2 million overdraft, and but we gave the explanation to the treasurer again, to the AG, and we understood, so, but we had learned our lessons, that we will no longer try to lift the 2 rounds. So if 1 million is remaining, be fine. We have had the argument before that since we say we don't have money, but we leave 1 million. 1 million is a lot of money. In the standards of the people, a million is really my news, particularly if you are scared of overspending the votes, you know. And the good thing was that the amount wasn't too big to be classified as an authorized expenditure, so it was declared an overdraft. So it's not ideal that we end up there. So that's where we are right now. We are focused on our accounts. We are wrapping things down. We aren't having any major programs except the athletics, school sports championship, but other than that, we are good to go. We are confident that we will spend as close to a zero as possible.
Lastly, Chair, I think the reason why DG is presenting this last part of the report, we are taking this opportunity to also inform the honorable members that our CFO, who will be taking Paya Guga, Honorable Guga Sumaya. There's a tentative resignation, and he's now serving his notice up to the end of this month. That is why next to him we have Dumelen Chatterjee, who is going to be our acting CFO. We are releasing him because of the reasons he has put forward, clean hearts, and we are thanking him for the work he has been doing in the department. Thank you.
I wanted to say that we have been with this department. We have seen the results. We are not working alone. You have your boss, but you were making sure that the monies of the people in this department, we are always accounted for. That's why yesterday you were doing that as a department. I'm suspecting ourselves as a committee. We are testifying that we've seen your good work, but we don't know how this department allowed you to persuade whatever you want to persuade, because we've got departments where they can't account for billions. We're not part of those departments because of your work with your colleagues collectively. But we do accept and hoping that the acting one will follow steps, and that's why we are here. We assume that this committee always wants this department to account. When it comes to money, we are whipping this department. We don't want to leave stone unturned, but cannot say no. Honorable members, this is our report. Can we engage on it starting with Honorable Mshongo, Honorable Musti, Honorable Bachman, Honorable Mustafa, Honorable Rakhom, and that's all. Thank you. Just a moment, Honorable. I want somebody to put an apology for Honorable Rakhom in that meeting where they are calling you and me. We cannot leave this. So I wanted that you must be relieved, because I'm most you that we are going nowhere, because I was aware that we're supposed to be where we've been called. But this is a very priority meeting. Thank you. Honorable Mshongo?
Chair, we reserve our rights, and it can be noted that we are not visiting him. Because he didn't complete his job. firstly, he didn't develop boxing South Africa. That was his task. Can it be noted? Because financially, boxing South Africa gave another loan. And I believe if the father excelled, even the son must excel. Now, on that note, we're not releasing it. But nonetheless, I wanted to find out regarding finances. We welcome the finances. I wanted to find out how much is the actual percentage. I usually battle with the financial, the actual figures. I usually battle to say, why did you leave this? And I understand the explanation, but how much is it exactly?
Inventory.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I was actually going to ask the same question that Honorable Mfongo asked. Yeah. No, Chairperson, but let me also take this opportunity to thank the SAB for having, you know, worked with us wonderfully. We never had squabbles with him. We are going to release him. I don't know why they want to keep him. We are going to release him. In particular, that I understand that he's going to make big money. So,
Are you declaring, knowing where he's going? One goes, money is back to this committee.
You're going to
But thank you very much, Chairperson. And we also want to welcome to meet the Mutasin. Kasi, this man is for the Hamohead. Give him so Hamohalam. Amen.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. This time I'm really meeting from this guy. He cannot release him to the vegetable starter. Let's leave him a deal.
Spend to revamp him.
Chairperson, I think the new acting CFO in the bar is very high. It's going to be hard work to achieve very high. For 5 years now, we were part of this, and then all the time. So we expect you to maintain it, and then okay. My question is on program 4, slide 25, 4.4. My question is, because I've heard the COO say sometimes the soil might not qualify for the structure and so on. So I want to understand, do you send the assessor there to check and also advise the school on the ground, and again also the level of the ground? Does the department have the school in leveling, or you expect them to make it level before everything? I think that's not the
thank you. Thank you.
No, Chair, I also appreciate the presence for the past 5 years of our CFO. Well, your legacy is quite good in audit throughout your presence. So we welcome the new person. My worry really, because I mean, you've been performing this rather on one television, Sanabo.
Mm-hmm.
We are worried because I think it is going down. I think last time we were supposed to come and make a presentation.
Yeah.
They didn't come, they were supposed to come
today.
And I'm hating it because normally we see SASCOM would deal with this. I'm worried because it looks like there are serious problems there. And SASCOM is aware about them. So I'm just asking whether is something being done about Sanabo, because otherwise it's going to disappear. I suspect there are serious problems. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm suspecting, as a chairperson, I was worried when the office communicated then, saying that SANABO, they're not ready to come. With immediate effect, they changed the program which we agreed upon. There's no explanation exactly why are they not here, DG, and the collective. Whilst you do understand what is going on with our boxing South Africa and with other things that are not well in some other provinces in the boxing arena. So, really, maybe as outgoing committee, we're noticing this thing of boxing amateur than our potential teachers.
Chair, Sana World has its challenges. And I guess no one wanted Sanabo before because it had no money. But as soon as they became Federation of the Year and they got the amount staff, the revised structures and even people who had abandoned Sanabo years ago came back. And all of a sudden they were already at each other's throats trying to break out and deal with students. Mofu himself and his executives decided in a national general council meeting of Sanabo to resign out of anger and walked away. And so the rascals declared themselves an interim executive. And then now wanted SASCOC recognition. And then SASCOC found that the resignation of the leadership wasn't handled properly and procedurally as it was supposed to. And then subsequently, SASCOC reinstated the elected executives led by Andy Levy. But the so-called interim executives refused to vacate office. And there has been a tug of war and conflict between the two warring factions. SASCOC has not yet placed Sanabo under administration, which means that technically Sanabo can attract additional support from its partners as the Federation requiring intervention. We have been pressed upon SASCOC. Once we got the quarterly report, and we found that Sanabo was not used under the Federation of the Administration. We asked for an explanation and it seems that we are just going to take that to SASCOC to use the request have a specific report on Sanabo to know what they say. Added to this, the Sanabo's biggest challenge is the Sanabo's International Federation, AIBA. AIBA, too, is a unique own international challenge. It's facing potential expulsion from the IOC, and South Africa played a key role for AIBA on the African continent. And consequent to that, as you may know, Sanawo is sitting with money that we have requested that it be frozen. They were supposed to go to the first season of the Open Boxing League. It has not taken place because of the infighting. And as if that's not enough, with IOC's assistance that they should allow, because basically what AIBA had attempted to do is, has attempted to play and bridge the gap of professional boxing as well as amateur boxing, and lured by money, they were hoping that they will get people like Floyd Mayweather and others to fight for an Olympic medal. And this is where the dispute between them and the IOC emerged. Now, South Africa got caught up in that entanglement. And Sanabo itself found itself entangled because Sanabo carried the African vote on that matter. And the president of AIBA is quite a good friend of the president of Sanabo. And they sat in the same caucus, a caucus that ironically was endorsed earlier before it arrived where it is and now. They found themselves entangled in all of that. And now the so-called interim leadership is utilizing that issue as a basis of strengthening the division and calling for the basically the dissolution of the elected activities. So I'm trying to summarize a long story of what really is at the core of the challenges. And that's why we have asked for Sascock's report on the specific intervention it would make into Sanabo. What is this empowering members of the committee is what we have said before. It's the current dispute resolution procedure in the law. We are not able to intervene. If we do, we are too early on it. Up until Sascock said we have failed to handle this matter, we are not able to enter the fray. And even when Andy Lemo came to see me at my office to plead for support, I said to him, our hands are tied. If we enter now, Sascock will be within its rights to say we are actually interfering. Because the sport movement has in fact that it has failed to resolve this whole issue. So and I think that's the limitation, and that's why we are opting for a dispute resolution tribunal that will look at matters of this nature at an early stage. By now, honestly, Sanabo's problems have been carrying on for 2 years. By now we should have long entered, but we are not able to do so because of the limitations in the statutes. So that's the long and short of it, and that's why you may not see the meeting coming here, because now the portion of government money they have is frozen. How do they fund that? How do they move around? How do they get programs going? And we too, I will be irresponsible as a transferring officer if I don't do that. Because in terms of data protection, and when you don't know who really is in charge and who's controlling the money, and who's going to account to you back for the use of that money, not freezing it is not an option, because then I will be taken to task, and that I would have reached Section 24 of the FMA, that I should have ensured that the people I'm actually transferring the money to will be able to account for it. And I think that that's the balance we need, and where we can be able to assist, we can. But we are not so worried really about Sanabo more than we are about federations like Basito. We are most concerned about those than we are about Sanabo. We think that Sanabo, with the right attitude and with the commitment, it can be turned around quickly. But as you may know, the body that is supposed to be served, the federation itself is focused on its own internal
That's the thing.
And I think that the interventions won't be as quick as they are required. And the only thing that will remedy this gentleman and for me, irrespective of the personalities, is the dispute tribunal. The one thing gets into being and is there, it can adjudicate the dispute impartially and without the undue influence of anybody, and it will make its findings and everything and help the process move forward. But otherwise, we're going to be in this particular mode of having to play to the lions, and people, depending on which federation supports me, which one is likely to vote for me. At the next conference, they'll always make decisions based on that, not basically on the objective factors on the table. And that's why we, the department, in most cases where we've intervened, we didn't care who it was. When we intervened in athletics, we didn't care. When we intervened in cricket, we didn't care whether it was the Jews or the Indians. We just did not care, because we don't want to be voted by any of them. We will just take it. And that is why Prime Minister Mbarula had to sit in a meeting and ask them,
what is this thing? Is it Jew or is it Indian?
but the long and short of it was that the cricket, the battle was for the heart and soul by the Indian cabal and by the Jewish cabal, who controlled cricket. And that's what we had to crack at that time and to resolve this thing. So that's why we're saying that whenever we intervene in a federation, honestly, we don't really care whose interests are what, because we are not interested in the voters. On the issue of whether we verify the things, yes, we do send our own engineers, we send our own people to do the registration of sites and all of that. And even on the MIG programs, although the money is recovered, we still do the verifications and we still do the certificates of payments and all of those things. You can pay for the work done by APM and others. And that's why when we have had disputes with municipalities that go ahead and pay, even when we say we are an APM and others. And I think that we have been making it our business to inform the winter general who will give that municipality to say this is the situation for them to follow that. And they know that the consequences will follow.
Thank you, DG. But really, I'm suspecting whilst we are you responded, honourable members, I'm seeing that this problem of Usanapo, it will be a problem that will be staying there, especially that you know, a minister is just given as a report saying that they are going to meet with SASCOC tomorrow. SASCOC still having their problems, very serious one we know as a committee. So they are not yet having time for Usanapo, and Usanapo money is frozen for 2 years. So the reality is that sometimes these gaps in legislation, what is another thing besides legislation, the act on whatever. We suppose immediately when we are seeing this thing, propose amendments in acts and whatever. Because look at now, it's 2 years, it's too much, and now people are supposed to intervene on act as they are saying that we still have problem of basketball. But because of that rigidity of some of us as leaders saying that we don't give too much power to this one, and when you don't have power, you will be interfering. So we are noting this, and I'm raising this until we call that meeting of involved stakeholders or whoever in this thing of stampede in the sport. We're not aware that so many gaps in each of those stakeholders that are there. So I'm very worried, really. I don't know as we're going to finish our term what is the plan about some gaps that you cannot intervene, but look at this now. People are suffering out there. Honorable Bergman. The time's past 1 o'clock, but I'm suspecting I'm taking the last end.
Chair, thanks very much. The only reason I'm talking now is because of what the DG has said with some Mwaba. It's concerning to me that I know that TASCOC has just approved that dispute resolution, and as the DG said, it's not, the tribunal's not in play yet. But it's not just, as the DG said, there's basketball. I know that Karate's in a mess. Now, Karate has come to us for help. Karate goes to TASCOC, and TASCOC says it cannot interfere. Now, if TASCOC cannot interfere, and SRSA cannot interfere, who can interfere? We've got a very big problem here, because someone's meant to have teeth. And I'm not sure that, you know, as the DG says, when it comes to votes, it's almost too convenient that in certain areas you interfere, and certain areas you let sleeping dogs bark, because that's going to bring votes when it comes to the AGM. Now that's problematic though. If your own resolution now, the new constitution, TASCOC says that you can take your disputes to TASCOC and they turn around and say they cannot interfere, maybe what we need to do is start summarizing in our little time that we have left, maybe instead of the oversight. To summon some of these organizations like basketball, like Karate, and like Samadhi to this meeting, and they can't come here if they're not prepared. We will summon them. We don't care if they're prepared or not. We will find out what the resolutions, what the disturbances are, and then we can make recommendations to the minister, or we can make recommendations to SASCOC. So it's not a tribunal. It's just within our rights to have such bodies appear before us to give us an understanding of what the fights and disputes are about. In Sanwaba, where there's no money, it's very problematic, because that means there's only two reasons why people take on responsibilities, either influence or money. So if there's no money in Sanwaba, there must be a lot of influence going into the proper boxing and for promoters or for someone. So there must be an interest for someone that they are hotly contesting leadership positions there. And I think that it would be remiss of us as a committee to let this go and to finish our term in Parliament having not tried to assist these organisations to at least find some form of pot, whether we refer them back to SASCOC or we give SASCOC a mandate to the Minister to try and resolve these issues.
Thank you, Honourable Bergman. We have noted your contribution as I've started surely seeing this problem. But in that order, thank you so much, Honourable Members in the Department. Even taking the time for lunch once we're going to a plenary, the meeting is closed.
You must come and join us this time.
What is the problem? What wrong have I done? Come in that side.
You come in this side.
Right here. Right here.
Let's go and take a photo here.
He's a doctor. I'm having stiff legs, and I'm suspecting very soon I'll be him being a thrombosis. Is to flying up and down and sitting down. The legs are stiff like that.
You try and walk some of the morning meetings. You need to start doing that. Drinking a bit more often. To get the blood flowing.
To do what?
Walk in the morning.
Walk in the morning.
Maybe after waking up.
After wake,
20 minutes.
I'm in trouble. I'm telling you. I'm even going to the doctor just now.
Ay, 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 ay